Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
I'm sorry. Could you get my chart in?
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
We're on 56.2, not 56, 63.2.
Hetur jivos yasargadir avidya karma kadakaha yam chanu shainam prahur avyang pritamuta pare.
This is a continuation of the definitions of the 10 topics of the canto according to the 12th canto. Translation: the cause, hetu, of the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the universe is in one sense the living being, because in ignorance he performs material acts. Some call him the person underlying the material creation, and others call him the unmanifested self. Okay, this verse is definitely talking about the jiva. The word jiva is given. The jiva is the cause of creation and so on. It says that, but we know from elsewhere, including the beginning of the Vedanta Sutra, that Brahman, the absolute truth, is supposed to be the actual cause of sarga and adi. So in this translation, the word isn't there. It isn't there in the Sanskrit, but we added, in one sense, the cause. Okay, but it doesn't say that in the Sanskrit, but you have to understand it properly according to other things that we are supposed to know. Jiva is not the ultimate cause of creation, but he's the cause in the sense that it's created for him, because of him, that the material world needs to be created. So you could say cause in the sense of the reason why. Why is there a material universe? Because the jivas need one. God doesn't need any material universe. He has no use with one. He has no need for one. So the jiva is the actual reason for creation of the material world. And that's called hetu. So the word hetu refers to the jiva, who is avidya karma karaka, the doer of ignorant activities, or activities under the influence of illusion. They also call him the one who lies down. Well, here we translated the one underlying the material creation. Jiva bhuta mahaboho yaidam darya gitte jagat. The whole world is maintained by jivas. If you include the demigods among the jivas, which they are, they and the living entities under their control are maintaining the universe. So in that sense, we can call the jiva the anushayinam, the underlying one. And also unmanifest. Because most jivas can't see a jiva. We're jivas, but we can't see jivas. We're jiva blind. We see bodies. Maybe we see mental effects, but very few people can actually, even though they all are jivas, very few of them have the eyes to see a jiva. So the jiva is unmanifest. Okay, then the gloss on this given by Jiva Goswami. Hetur nimittam asya vishwasya yato yam avidyaya karma karaka yameva hetum kechit chaitanya pradanyena anushayinam prahur upadi pradanyen avyakritam iti. The hetu is the efficient cause. Nimitta, there are different kinds of causes, but we're specifying the efficient cause. Of this means of the universe. The jiva is that cause in the sense that in ignorance he serves as the performer of material acts. Some call this cause the one who underlies, emphasizing that it is a living spirit. And others call it the unmanifest, emphasizing the jiva's upadhi. Okay. So Jiva Goswami is equating underlying with being a living spirit. Okay, living spirit underpins, is underneath, is the basis of all existence. The bodies are covering the jivas. The jivas are inside. So the jiva is underlying. He's basic. The real essence of even material existence is the living spirit. And all the matter is just external covering. The unmanifest, emphasizing the jiva's upadhi. Well, avyakrita is also a name of nature. The unmanifest refers to pradhan, or material nature. And we're calling the jiva avyakrita Narayano Purovyaktat. That's Shankaracharya's phrase. Narayan is beyond the unmanifested. And the unmanifested means material nature. Of course, the jiva is not, he's not the ultimate cause. He's also not material nature. But if we're talking about the jiva in terms of his material covering, his upadhi, jiva in this world, what do we see of him? We see his material body. So, okay, we can, paropi manunte nartam, although he is transcendental, he thinks himself to be a product of the three worlds. So he does get considered. He thinks he's his body and everybody else thinks he's this body. Okay, we can move into the next part. Vyatirekan vayao yasya jagrat swapna susuptishu maya mayeshu tad brahma jiva vritish papashrayaha. The Supreme Absolute Truth. This is definition of apashraya. The ashraya, the summum bonum. The Supreme Absolute Truth is present throughout all the states of awareness, wakefulness, sleep, and deep sleep. Throughout all the phenomena manifested by the external energy and within the functions of the living entity. And he also exists separate from all of these. Thus situated in his own transcendence, he is the ultimate and unique shelter. That's a good definition of the Absolute Truth. That we're getting toward the, that's like a final statement of this is Tattva Sandarbha, there's your Tattva. And now we can move on to the next Sandarbha and define him as Bhagavan. Okay, there's explanation of this by Jiva Goswami. Sri Badarayana Samadhi Labdharta Virodad. Atracha jiva shuddha swarupam ev ashraya tvena navyakyayate kintvayam evarto jagrad adishu avastasu mayameyeshu Maya Shakti Kalpiteshu, Mahadadi Dravyeshu Cha, Kevalasurupena Vyatideka, Paramasakshitayan Vayas Cha, Yasya Tad Brahma. Okay, the word Brahma is there in the verse. Supreme Absolute Truth. Cha Jivanam Vritishu Shuddha Surupataya Sopaditya Cha Vartaneshu. What does Vritti mean? The functions of the living entity? That is, Shuddha Surupataya, in terms of his pure identity, and also in terms of his material false identities. He's got Vartana activities in both, in his natural identity and in his artificial identities. The jiva has various activities. Those are his vrittis, stitishu, or his situations. Apashrayaha, sarvam atyatikramasyashrayaha, ityarta. The absolute truth is apashraya. He who trans everything, but is the shelter of everything. Apa ityetat kalu varjane, varjanam chatitikrame, Pariyavasyatiti. Translation? The ashraya is not here explained to be the pure identity of the jiva, for that would go against the substance of Sri Badarayana's meditative trance. Yes, I'm sorry? Oh, I'm sorry. Is it okay? Yeah, we did. We discussed it. Rather, the explanation given is this. The apashraya, the one ashraya above all the others, is Brahman, the supreme truth. In the word apashraya, the prefix apa carries the basic sense of exclusion. Right? Apa. Apagachati, you go away from something. Exclusion, which gives the extended idea of transcending. The absolute truth is the shelter of everything, but he transcends everything else. He's separate from everything else. Amidst wakefulness and the other states of living consciousness, and also amidst the material substances created by the energy Maya, such as the Mahatattva, Brahman is manifested. He is manifested both negatively by keeping his own separate exclusive identity and positively by being present as the ultimate witness. Whether the jivas are situated in their true spiritual identities or covered by upadis, he is present with them in all their conditions. I think that leaves out the word Vartaneshu. I'm making a note that I really had to fix that. I said whether they're situated like this or like that, but Vartaneshu means activity. And that's missing in the translation. Okay. No, I'll think. No. It's not engaged. Engaged means someone else makes him act. It's just Vartana is just acting or moving around in a circle. But it, you know, for the jivas, it means just acting. It's the word vritti. Vritti would first mean activity, and that can also mean situation. So I just ignored that in the translation. Okay. Anyway, it's noted. Okay, that's the apashraya. About that. Well, the jiva has. See, he has in his pure state and in his conditioned state, he has different kinds of activities in each. Those are his among his vrittis. No?
Okay, yeah. I'm just trying to understand.
It's missing in the translation. I got to fix it. I got to add that. I just didn't translate it. See, it's jivanam vrittishu. It's the vrittis of the jivas. It's the jivas vartanas and their stittis. Yep, it's of the jivas. But he's the apashraya among them. Yeah, he's like the shelter of, but we're using the locative. In all the activities and situations of the jivas, he's the apashraya, the supreme truth. Okay? Let's see what comes next. 63.4. We're coming to the final stretch. Tadevam apashrayabhi vyakti dvara bhutam hetu shabda vyapadishtasya jivasya shuddha svarupa jnanam aha dvabhyam. Okay. A way to discover this ultimate shelter is to apashraya is to know the pure essential identity of the jiva, who is designated as the cause, hetu. Therefore, this knowledge is described in two verses. Okay, so the next two verses are about the shuddha svarupa of the jiva, because knowing that about the jiva helps us understand the shuddha svarupa of Brahman. Okay. Padarteshu yata dravyam tanmatram rupanamasu bijadi panchatantasu yavastasu yuta yutam virameta yadachittam hitva vrittitrayam svayam yogena vatadatmanam videhaya nivartate. That's Bhagavatam 12:7, verses 20 and 21. Although a material object may assume various forms and names, its essential ingredient is always present as the basis of its existence. Basis of its existence. Similarly, both conjointly and separately, the jiva is always present with the created material body through its phases of existence, beginning with conception and ending with death. Okay, you might think, well, why aren't these two verses about the absolute truth? But the absolute truth doesn't undergo those states of existence, birth up to death. Either by one's discrimination or by one's regulated spiritual practice, one's mind may withdraw from the three functional levels of wakefulness, sleep, and deep sleep. Then the jiva understands the supreme soul and ceases from material endeavor. Okay, we've defined the eternal existence of the jiva through all phases of consciousness and all stages of material existence. And now we're describing the potential of the jiva to realize the supreme. In this verse, then the jiva understands the supreme soul and ceases from material endeavor. Okay, that's not a description of the Rasa-lila, but it's in the right direction. We're one step at a time. This is as far as the Tattva-sandarbha takes us. The last anuchet. Rupa nam atmakeshu padarteshu Gatadishu yata dravyam prithvyadi yutam ayutam cha bhavati karya drishtim vinap upalambanat tata tanmatram shuddham jiva chaitanya matram vastu garbhadhanadi panchatantasu navasvapi avastas avidyaya yutam svatas tu ayutam iti shuddham atmanam ittam gatva nirvanaksan apashrayanusandana yogyo bhavatit ityaha virameteti vrittitrayam jagrat swapna susupti rupam. Atmanam paramatmanam. Swayam vamadivadiriva maya mayatvanusandhanena devahutyadiriva anushtitena yogena va. Tatasche hayas tadanushilana vyativikta cheshtaya. Shri Sutaha. Udishtak sambandaha. A material substance, this is explanation of those two verses. Jiva Goswami says, a material substance can be seen even apart from its products. A substance like earth, although found in objects with forms and names such as pot, is also apart from them. In the same way, because of avidya, the pure living soul, a pure object none different from the Supreme, exists in 9 states, beginning with conception and ending with death. And yet, as a pure self, he is also apart from them. So comparing the transformations of the jiva, the different stages of his life, comparing that to like you take clay and can make different things out of it. You can make a clay pot, you can make a clay elephant, but this clay is clay, and there's always other clay left over that hasn't been made into anything. Similarly, the jiva has his separate existence, which is eternal and underlies all the transformations he may undergo in material illusion. Continuing, as stated in the second verse, beginning with viramita, when one understands this, one becomes indifferent to material life and competent to search for the ultimate shelter. The 3 functional levels are wakefulness, sleep, and deep sleep. And the word Atma means the Supreme Soul. One may reach the right understanding either on one's own, by one's own discrimination, as Vamadev and others did by recognizing the illusory nature of the world, or by yoga, by regulated spiritual practice, as performed by persons like Devahuti. That one then desists from endeavor means from endeavor other than to cultivate the spiritual realization. Okay, we're not going to have the jiva stop doing everything, but we're going to have him stop doing everything material. Brahmabhuta prasanatma nishochati nakanshati. This is Brahmabhuta realization. And from that, one can progress to actual devotional service. The verses under discussion, Bhagavatam 12.7, 11 through 21, all of them were discussed here. These verses were spoken by Sri Suta. Thus we have given a general indication of the sambandha. See, he says sambandha udishta. You have to understand the technicality, what the word udesha and the past passive participle udishta means. What does it mean? Mention, yeah. Udesha is just mentioning something. It's something else to give a complete definition or a thorough discussion. So we've briefly mentioned what the tattva is. We have more to do. The sambandha. Now, actually, what do we mean by sambandha here? Yeah, that's the... In Vedanta, sambandha means a relationship between Brahman and its energies. Sambandha, abhideya prayojana. When it's used in Vedanta philosophy, when it's used in explaining the Vedanta Sutra, then sambandha means relationship, but there it means relationship between Brahman and all of its energies. Here we're using the other... Yeah, here we're using the other definition that's given by many pandits, and you know, when they talk about the anubandha chatushtaya, that you have to indicate the sambandha of your book, how your book explains what it's supposed to explain, the relationship between vachya and vachaka, what needs to be said and the words that are supposed to say it. Do the words adequately say what you want to say? Do they actually cover the topic? That is sambandha. So here, the words are the words of the Bhagavatam. You know, the whole thing is to show that the Bhagavatam does properly explain the absolute truth. So we've given a brief indication here in the Tattvasandarbha, but the discussion of that sambandha, the relationship between the Bhagavatam and how the Bhagavatam describes the absolute truth, that will continue through the next three sandarbhas. The first four sandarbhas deal with sambandha. Fifth sandarbha deals with abhideya. Last sandarbha deals with prayojana. There is a commentary here. I'll read it. The liberation Shukadev lists in the second canto as one of the 10 main topics is what Sutta in the 12th canto calls atyantiko layaha, ultimate dissolution, one of the four kinds of annihilation. During another kind of annihilation, the period of universal dormancy between creations, the conditioned jiva is understood to be lying down in his turn, anushayinam, in the sense that he is asleep in the body of Lord Vishnu, awaiting the chance to fulfill his dormant desires for sensory pleasure. Okay, I think Jiva Goswami gave a different explanation of anushayanam, and we were following that, but this is an alternative explanation. We said that jiva is underlying, like clay underlies the pots. But it also means that he lies down with Mahavishnu in the time of annihilation. Also means that. When the jiva understands his actual identity to be distinct from that of his bodily designations in the various stages of growth and decline, he becomes capable of meditating on the personality of Godhead. He meditates either by his own spontaneous initiative, as did Vamadev while sitting in his mother's womb, or by the regular practice of spiritual discipline, as shown by Devahuti, after she learned Sankhya Yoga from her son, Kapiladev. Srila Jiva has more to say about the topic of annihilation in his Sarva Samvadini. Okay, we have a Sarva Samvadini section. He also comments on the conclusion of the first Sandarbha. After that, in the Sarva Samvadini. The purpose of the first four Sandarbhas is to show how Srimad Bhagavatam reveals the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. In other words, their basic theme is sambandha, the connection between the described and the description. Sri Tattvasandarbha has presented the theme of sambandha in a preliminary form to be fully elaborated in the Bhagavat, Paramatma, and Krishna Sandarbhas. Iti Kali Yuga Pavana Swabhajana Vibhajana Prayojanavatara Sri Sri Bhagavat Krishna Chaitanya Deva Charananuchara Vishva Vaishnava Rajasabha Sabhajana Bhajana Sri Rupa Sanatana Anushasana Bharati Garbe Sri Bhagavat Sandarbe Tattva Sandarbho Nama Pratamap Sandarbaha. The personality of Godhead Sri Krishna Chaitanya Deva, the savior of Kali Yuga, descended to this world for the sake of freely distributing worship of himself. And his followers, the entire world assembly of Vaishnavas, revere Sri Rupa Goswami and Sri Sanatana Goswami. From the womb of the divine eloquence of the teachings of Sri Rupa and Sanatana, this work, Sri Bhagavat Sandarbha, has taken birth. Thus ends its first book, entitled Tattva Sandarbha. Okay, that's the tag at the end of the book. It comes like that at the end of each of the six Sandarbhas. There's something in the Sarva Samvadini. Okay, let's find it. Okay.
can't find it. Wait. Okay. Sandarbham upasamharati uddishtak sambandha iti. The Sandarbha concludes with the words, thus we have given a general indication of the sambandha. That's the last words, the last two words. Sambandina paramatattvasya dinmatram eva darshitam iti artaha. That is to say, we have only pointed out something about the Supreme Truth to whom this text has a relationship. He's the sambandhi, the person who has the relationship with the book. Atra tasya sambandina shastravachyatve shadvidam lingam api udartritam eveti napunar vivritam. That the truth who holds this relationship is actually described by the scripture is a matter for which we have here only cited a verse about the six signs, but without elaboration. Okay, so far we had a mention of the six signs by which you can tell a long section of a book or a whole book. What is it actually about? There's so many different things discussed. What's the real theme? You use these six criterion to decide what's the most important, what's really the essential idea of the passage. That was mentioned, but it wasn't analyzed thoroughly. So here we're going to identify how it's applied to the Bhagavatam. Upakram upasamhara abhyaso purvita palam. Yeah. Purvita da da da. Shadvidam. Vakil. Anyway, you want me to find it? Okay, I'll tell you in just a second. Upakramo. Okay, I have a question mark. It means I don't know where it's from. But it's, wow. It says here, Paramatma Sandarbha. Nah, it's somewhere in the top of Sandarbha. Okay, can I go back and find it? I have to do a search then. I'll run the search and we'll move on while it's searching. I don't remember. I know I've seen it, but I've been working on this on the second Sandarbha also, so maybe it's there and not here. Sorry? Do you know where? Are you going to find it? Okay, I'm going to let the computer try to find it. Okay. Upa from Opa. And we'll move on while that's being solved. Yeah, it is here in Tevasandarbha. We'll have to locate it. Krishna, Krishna. Why can't I... Okay, file 14. Okay, here we are. We'll continue. Okay, so it says about these six signs. We did discuss them. Tatahi tatropakrama opasamhara yor aikyam. Vedyam vastavamatra vastu iti. Sarva vedanta saram hi iti. Okay. First, taking beginning and end together is one sign. Because you do.
The idea is when something is mentioned both in the beginning of the book and at the end, that's an indication that that must be the main theme. Or it's the strongest indication. So we have the two statements. Second verse of the Bhagavatam, the substance here is knowable and substantial. Vedyam vastavam atravastu. And in the 12th canto, last chapter, is it last or next to the last chapter? Last chapter, 12th verse, is only 24 verses in that chapter, near the very end of the Bhagavatam. Herein we find... No. And Bhagavatam is the essence of all Vedanta. So, the substance here is knowable and substantial. And Bhagavatam is the essence of all Vedanta. So, they're both saying the same thing, that the absolute truth is something that can be known. Vedanta is the essence of all knowledge, and Bhagavatam is the essence of all Vedanta. So that Bhagavatam is describing the absolute truth is indicated in the very beginning of the Bhagavatam and in the very end. We can take that as a major theme of the Bhagavatam. Abhyasa. Abhyasa means repetition. If something is said repeatedly, then it's probably a major topic. Repetition is shown up Abhyasaha Atrasarga Iti. Repetition is shown in the verse beginning, herein we find primary creation. Atrasarga Visargascha. Okay, I don't know what the repetition is there. I have to check that. Novelty is shown in the statement. After that, the next strongest indication is novelty. If something new and different is said, then that might be a major theme. This is not as strong an indication as something being said both at the beginning and the end, or something said many times, but it's the third best indication. If something is a totally novel idea, and the statement there is Vedanti Tat Tattva Vida. The knowers of the truth say that this absolute truth is known as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Did you find it? I go back to my search. I may have found it also. Let's see. What did you find? Where is it? It's in 13, which means it's in Sarva Samvadani.
Yeah.
Okay, let me look. In 52, yeah. Okay, let's see how long this discussion goes on. A sentence, moreover, belongs to a Mahavakya. Okay, we were talking about words and sentences and how they're understood and how they carry their meanings. And then you can put sentences together to make a bigger part of speech. A Mahavakya is a group of sentences, and its meaning is ascertained according to its beginning, conclusion, and so on. As it is said, the signs used to determine overall meaning are beginning and conclusion, repetition, novelty, result, praise, and logical reason. Okay, and there's some explanation of that. I'll read it. Okay, and it's not a long discussion, and also no application is given of it. It's just mentioned in a brief clarification of what the terms are. I'll read the clarification. It's just two paragraphs. The six signs that indicate overall meaning are beginning and conclusion, which count as one, reiteration, the fact of being unknown before, that's a purvata, the fruit or purpose, glorification and logical support. Thus, the meaning of a Mahavakya can be understood by positive and negative comparison and by equivalence of meaning. Here, logical support does not mean being graced by dry speculation. Rather, it is simply the characteristic of being able to somehow give an explanation of what is stated in a particular scripture. Otherwise, we would have to conclude that the scripture serves no purpose. Okay, that means logic or logical reason. A passage may give a logical reason. That's the last indication that that might, what you're giving a reason for might be a main theme. It's the least, the weakest of the six signs, but it's there. And it doesn't mean dry speculation. Speculation that contradicts or ignores the Shastra. It's speculation that explains, or logic that supports and explains the Shastra. Okay, there's some commentary here that clarifies more about what these six signs are, so I'll read that. An extended passage of a text. Is it raining? Oh, okay. An extended passage of a text may discuss several different themes, thus causing difficulty in judging what the main theme of the passage is. The method of deciding by these six signs is provided for resolving such doubts. If an idea is mentioned both at the beginning and the end of a passage, that idea is likely to be the central theme. Again, the idea is likely to be the central theme if it is mentioned repeatedly, if it is introduced as new information not revealed before. If knowing or executing the idea is said to lead to a special result, if the idea is highly praised, and if a logical argument is presented to establish its importance. By comparing which of these signs are present or absent for each of a number of alternative themes, one can determine the actual theme. Okay, so that is a theoretical discussion, because here in that long section that goes to with Anuccheed 10, this long section of just discussion of what language really is, what words are, where do the meaning of words come from, and where do the meaning of sentences come from, and where do the meaning of whole books come from. That's all discussed theoretically. And only here at the very end, or back in the Sarvasamvadini, but the Sarvasamvadini for the very last part of the last Anuccheed, we're going to apply these six principles for the first time to the service, to the Bhagavatam, to showing how the Bhagavatam, the major theme of the Bhagavatam is the absolute truth. There will be further discussion. This will be dealt with using this same methodology. There will be a more elaborate discussion in Anuccheed 105 of the Paramatma Sandarbha when we eventually get to there, based on the same six signs. But here it just says, here Jiva Goswami just briefly says, first, taking beginning and end together as one sign, there are the statements, the substance here is knowable and substantial, and Bhagavatam is the essence of all Vedanta. Okay, that's saying basically the same idea, both at the beginning and the end. Repetition is shown in the verse beginning, herein we find primary creation. I have to figure out how there's repetition there. But maybe that's explained in the commentary. I'll have to read the commentary. No, it looks like it doesn't say. Okay. I got to make a question to myself then. Where's the repetition there? Okay. Jiva Goswami says it, but I have to explain it. Novelty is shown in the knowers of the truth say, since other persons have not realized that of which these knowers have spoken. Knows those of the truth know that it's Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Well, that's something new. In other shastras, you don't hear that. Praise and result, those two signs, even though not shown before in examples, can be found in the statements, it bestows good fortune and uproots the threefold miseries. That and other statements, that's praise and it's also giving the good result you can get from knowing it. And reason is shown in the statement to clarify the tenth topic. The other nine topics of the Bhagavad Gita discussed to clarify or to explain the tenth topic, the ashraya. That's giving us a reason why the other nine topics are there. So that there are 10 major themes in the Bhagavad Gita, and the other ones are supportive. Let's see what the commentary says. Among the methods of spiritual interpretation used by the Mimamsa school, founded by Jaimini, there is a standard procedure for determining the main theme of a long text that discusses many topics. There are 6 indicators, lingas, for this judgment, all referred to in these final words of the Sarvasamvadini for the Sri Tattva Sandarbha. When both the beginning and the end of a text mention the same idea, this strongly indicates that the idea is likely to be the main theme. A candidate for the main theme may also disclose itself by being mentioned repeatedly, by not having been known before its mention in the text, by special praise offered for those who accept the idea, by special results promised to those who accept it, and by being supported by persuasive logic. Citations given in the last anuchedas of this sandarbha imply 4 of the 6 lingas. Okay, there wasn't explicit discussion of the 6 lingas, but there were verses quoted that implied application of 4 out of the 6 of these 6 signs. The lingas called Artavada and Palam are not included. Okay, the other 6 of the signs were used without calling them such, all showing that the main theme of the Bhagavad Gita is the personality of Godhead. When text 50, okay, now I'm saying where this happens. When text 50 cites the words Vedyam Vastavam, and when 52.1 cites Sarva Vedanta Saram here, these imply the indicator beginning and end. Okay. So here the Sarvasamvadini is pointing this out to us, but it actually was already done in these earlier anuchedas. There was a quotation of Vedyam Vastavam, and very right after that, or soon after that, quotation of Sarva Vedanta Saramhi, which is at the very end of the Bhagavad Gita. These imply the indicator of beginning and end. When text 52.1 cites the verses beginning Atra Sargo Visargascha, and when 61.1 cites Sargo Syata Visargascha, these imply repetition. Oh, there's your repetition. You have 2 different lists of the 10 topics. So that's a good indication that the Sandarbhas are telling us that these 10 topics, especially the last one, are the real themes of the Bhagavad Gita, because we get 2 presentations of them from 2 different places in the Bhagavad Gita, in the Tattva Sandarbha. Okay. By citing the verse beginning Vedanti Tat Tattva Vidas, text 51 implies novelty. Okay, all this was discussed before, but just these signs weren't mentioned by name. And by citing the verses beginning Dashamasya Vishuddhartam, text 56.1 implies reason. Why there are 9 other topics? Because they help explain the 10th topic. Okay, and then there are 2 other signs that weren't discussed before, but they're also there. The Artavada and Palam, and we can, found a statement in the Bhagavad Gita that exemplifies it, and there are others also that exemplify promise of result and praise of a topic. Okay, I think that's relatively clear. Because the 2nd verse of the 1st canto and the 12th verse of the last canto's last chapter affirm that the Bhagavatam reveals the absolute truth, The Absolute Truth Bhagavan can be identified as the main theme of the Bhagavatam. We may think this is, you know, so what? I mean, isn't that obvious? It's obvious to us, but there are people in this world who will not be ready to accept that that's the main theme of the Bhagavatam or of anything else. The Absolute Truth Bhagavan. So we're trying to establish it beyond any doubt. That the greatest sages who know the Absolute Truth better than everyone else. I'm sorry? Both of the separate listings, that one? Both of the separate listings given for the 10 topics of the Bhagavatam also designate Bhagavan as the foundation of all else. Okay, so that's repetition being used, can be used as evidence that Bhagavan is the main theme of the Bhagavatam. That the greatest sages who know the Absolute Truth better than everyone else call that truth Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan is significantly unprecedented. A devotee who aims at realizing Bhagavan by deeply studying Srimad Bhagavatam receives praise by the promise that he will gain all good fortune and be relieved of all material distress. This good fortune and relief further indicate the results of realizing Bhagavan. And the verse beginning Dashamasya Vishuddhyartham presents a logical argument that studying all the other topics of the Bhagavatam is meant to prepare one for understanding Bhagavan. Later, in the extended discussion of texts 105 through 109 of Sri Paramatma Sandarbha, these six lingas will be used to demonstrate that the original personality of Godhead, rather than the other forms of the Supreme Lord who expand from him, is the supreme object of worship. These lingas will also be used in text 114 of Sri Bhakti Sandarbha to help prove that devotional service to the personality of Godhead is another main theme of the Bhagavatam. Okay, so we can look forward to application of these principles later on in the Sandarbhas. Then there's a short couple of sentences, Sarasamvadini on the colophon, 63.6. Sandarbha samapayati ititi vibhajanam danam vishvesmin ye vaishnava raja tatshreshtas tesham sabasu yat sabhajanam sammananam tasya bhajanam patram anushasanam agya shiksha va tadrupa yaparati tasya garbha rupe tatsambhuta ityartaha. Iti Sri Bhagavat Sandarbha Sri Sarva Sambhadinyam Sri Tattva Sandarbha Nuvayakya. The Sandarbha concludes with the words beginning iti. Distribution, vibhajana, means giving as a gift. Vishva Vaishnava Raj Sabha Sabhajana Bhajana means the receptacle recipient of service, honor, in the assemblies of the kings, the best, of Vaishnavas in the entire universe. Vaishnavas don't have kings. I mean, you know, there's not, Vaishnavas don't have to be ruled by Kshatriyas. But the Vaishnava Raja means the best Vaishnavas. Anushasana means order or instruction. The idea implied is that from the womb of the words of that order, that this, it is through the womb of the words of that order coming from Rupa and Sanatan, that this Sandarbha has taken birth. In other words, it's by the order of Rupa and Sanatan that Jiva Goswami undertook this writing. Thus ends Sri Sarvasambhadini, the further explanation that supplements Sri Tattva Sandarbha in Sri Bhagavat Sandarbha. And that's it. This Tattva Sandarbha is relatively short. It's 1/50th of the volume of all six Sandarbhas. But it establishes the authority of the Bhagavatam
and gives us a basic idea of what the Bhagavatam is about. The other Sandarbhas will develop this understanding on higher and higher levels systematically. Second Sandarbha is about the idea of Bhagavan. What is God? So a complete explanation, definition and explanation of the idea of God, Bhagavan. Other religions, you know, the word God is something that points to the unknowable, or you're not even allowed to say the word in some traditions. You have to, even God, I mean, you have to go G-D. But we have a different term, Bhagavan, and we can tell you a lot of things about Bhagavan. Even before we get specific and talk about Bhagavan as Krishna, even in generic terms, there's a lot to say about him. Two whole Sandarbhas worth, all coming from Srimad Bhagavatam. And we'll start tomorrow on the Bhagavat Sandarbha. I can only give out the Sanskrit text. But we'll proceed. If we have to proceed slowly, we will. Okay, so we'll stop here. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Sri Tattva Sandarbha Ki Jai.